The incidence of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, has spiked 40% in the U.S. over the past 10 years. We are going to talk about ADHD this hour and welcome your questions for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For people who suffer from ADHD, life can be challenging, lonely, and filled with anxiety. And yet it can be difficult to diagnose. Where is the line between distractedness and ADHD? We'll take a look at the facts and the fallacies of ADHD and welcome your experiences and your questions. Have you or someone you know been diagnosed with ADHD? How do you or they manage their symptoms? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Catherine Ellison, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. Ellison is the author of several books on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Both she and her son have been diagnosed with ADHD. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about that. Both you and your son have been diagnosed with ADHD. How's this affected your life?
Well, it made ADHD a personal and professional obsession for me, starting really around that time, which was 11 years ago. My son was 9, and I was about 48 years old. And like many parents, I watched him take a test and recognized myself in many of the symptoms that he was acknowledging. So since that time, I've really made it my business to try to find ways to help both of us. It's been quite a journey.
What were the symptoms that you were noticing in him that you recognized in yourself?
Well, it was actually a teacher who called my attention to it because my son was unfortunately having a lot of problems in class starting around the age of 9 when schoolwork started to get different, more difficult. And so the social situation also got more difficult for him. And she recommended that I get him evaluated. So I took him to a special program in San Francisco where they diagnosed him very thoroughly and then had a program. And basically the symptoms he had were distraction in class, a lot of restlessness, inability to finish things. Those are pretty much the classic things for children.
Yeah. And you nicknamed your son Buzz after the way his presence affected you, like a jolt of electricity.
That's partly why I also wanted to not use his real name so that, he wouldn't be affected forever.
Sure, you don't want his privacy. But is it typical for how people experience ADHD in others?
Well, that's a really good question because people with ADHD can often be in your face without meaning to. One of the classic symptoms is you interrupt a lot. You might not be a good listener. It's not because you're not trying, but you just have some great idea that you have to express first. And with my son, it was just that there were crises almost every minute, at school and at home. He'd be picking fights. In a way, as one doctor explained it to me, he was trying to wake up his brain. He had kind of a sleepy brain, and conflicts really helped him get the stimulation that he felt he needed.
So your son was diagnosed before you were. How did you cope with parenting your son while also confronting the disorder in yourself?
Well, that was definitely the topic of my whole first book about ADHD, because I realized it's really like a double whammy when parents have it, which is so common because ADHD is such a hereditary disease or disorder. You're very, very likely to have it if you find that your child has it. So you often find that parents are trying to write these reward charts and they're not being able to keep them up, and they're trying their best to keep their child on schedule, but they're having trouble keeping on schedule themselves. So often you need a lot of support.
Well, what precisely is ADHD?
ADHD is a neurobiological disorder that affects some 6.4 million children in the United States, as far as we know. Many children are overdiagnosed, but it's quite possible that some aren't getting the treatment and help they need. It's related to the way that the brain processes very important neurotransmitters, chemical messengers like dopamine, which help the brain know what when you should be motivated, when you should pay attention. So you get this ironic situation that a lot of people with ADHD can concentrate very well on things that are very meaningful to them. But as soon as things get relatively boring, we get more unreliable.
What is the difference between distractedness or being unfocused and ADHD?
That's a question that's on so many people's minds because right now we're in an era of information overload where the possibilities for distraction are endless. And almost everybody is having trouble keeping up with this constant flow of choices and information that we get through our phones and our computers. So a lot of us are feeling distracted simply because we have so many choices where to put our attention, and we have to be more disciplined. But ADHD is something else. It really is an authentic disorder that arises by the time somebody's about 12 years old. It can be diagnosed, although unfortunately not quite as precisely as we'd like, by a series of questions, and whether it's actually impairing in two situations, like at work and home or school and home. It's got to be impairing you to have a diagnosis.
Yeah, and statistics show that the diagnosis of ADHD is up 40% in the last 10 years for youth.
Right.
What factors do you think are contributing to this increase?
Well, there's some factors of just a lot more awareness and a lot more concern about it. But also, as my co-author, Stephen Hinshaw, who's a leading expert on ADHD, has found in his research, the advent of a lot of standardized tests in school and the way that schools have, over the past 10 years, gotten a lot more interested in measurement and trying to get kids, you know, passing these tests has created more concern, where a lot of kids who might not be diagnosed are being diagnosed.
Yeah. What is the effect on society?
Well, the ADHD costs us in the United States about $200 billion a year. That's not just medical treatment, but that's the cost of accidents, divorces, lost productivity at work. What people often don't recognize, because this is a disorder that we like to joke about a lot, because distraction and impulsivity can be funny sometimes, but it's not so funny when you have a severe case of it, because longitudinal research has shown that people with ADHD are more likely to get into car accidents, be divorced, have academic and professional failures. It can be really tough.
Yeah. And while the U.S. rates for youth have increased 40% in the last 10 years, now adults are the fastest growing segment of the population getting an ADHD diagnosis and medication for it. What's the significance of that?
That's probably the biggest news in our book, and we really look at the adult rates because they are shooting up. Just this year, it was reported that adults surpassed children in the number of prescription medications. But there, and this is a whole other question, there is quite a lot of abuse and off-label use of these medications. But in general, I personally think that a lot more diagnoses of adults could be very helpful. I felt it was really helpful in my case because it helped explain a lot of things that I couldn't explain about myself before, and it helped me get appropriate support.
Well, let's talk about that. We have Sonia on Facebook who asks, what is the clinical proof for this diagnosis? A blood test, a brain scan? How is it diagnosed?
See, that's a really common question, and you've got to look at the fact that there's no blood test or brain scan for any mental issue like depression or anxiety, and yet we take them very seriously, as we also should take ADHD. But ADHD is probably the most controversial disorder around because it's so involved in culture and parenting and, you know, whether we're raising our kids right, so it's much more of a hot-button issue. But the fact is that just like anxiety or depression, you get diagnosed for ADHD by a clinician, hopefully a good, thorough one, who in the best of cases will take a family history, will get more than one source of information, and will ask you a series of questions that really pinpoint the symptoms that you're having.
Yeah, so what sorts of symptoms were you having that made you check this out?
Well, I've had a long and varied career, I was a foreign correspondent for about 15 years. And that worked really well for me because I was on deadlines all the time. I was responding to emergencies. I didn't have people depending on me. And I, every time that something like a coup in Argentina came up, I could put everything aside and just focus. And that worked well. I did quite well at that. And then I came home to California, where I started freelancing, working at home, and raising my two kids. And everything kind of fell apart. I started losing things. At one point, I forgot to pick up my kids at school only once. Just couldn't keep things together quite as well. And around that time, my son and I started having difficulties because he was also very rebellious, and I had trouble coping with that. So, as in many cases, people with ADHD who find careers or work that really suits them do great. They can often do just great. You put somebody in a different context, and it's more challenging.
Yeah. And so how is ADHD treated in adults?
Pretty much like it is with kids, with a few exceptions. Medication is, again, that's part of the reason that this disorder is so controversial, because a lot of people say, oh, you know, psychiatrists just invented this to raise their income levels, or pharmaceutical companies are just pushing meds. Well, pharmaceutical companies have been very, very aggressive in marketing their wares, and that's a whole other show, but there's many things I don't agree with. But the problem is that while the medications have side effects for a lot of people, and a lot of people can't take them, and a lot of people aren't helped by them, some people are helped very much, and that includes adults as well as some children. I think, and my co-author Steve agrees, that medication should be used really as a last resort. You should try other things first. Interestingly enough, exercise really, really helps. If you get yourself into a discipline program of aerobic exercise, you'll find that it really helps your brain, and it's really good for kids. And that might be one of the reasons that the rates are climbing, because many schools have just cut back on PE and getting kids outdoors because they're trying to cram for these tests.
Interesting. We are talking with Catherine Ellison. She is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. She is co-author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. She is the author of several books on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. She and her son have been diagnosed with ADHD. So we welcome your questions about ADHD or any experiences you might have. Perhaps you have ADHD. What's it like for you? What about maybe your parent, a child who has ADHD? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, with our guest, Catherine Ellison, who has been diagnosed with ADHD, as has her son. She is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and she is the co-author of the new book, ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question or a story to share, you can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, Catherine, I'm not surprised. We have full lines and lots of reaction on Facebook, including Matthew in Sheboygan, who says that he thinks one reason we might be seeing more ADHD is because people are claiming to have it to get access to Adderall. What's your response to that?
I think that's probably true. There's a lot of pressure in our society to perform, and longer and harder than we ever have before. And we're seeing doctors start prescribing medications that have been used for ADHD to, for instance, people who've had chemo treatment. And more recently, there was a study saying that medication could be helpful with women who are having trouble with menopausal brain, you know, that we have these cognitive declines after a certain age. So people are feeling nervous about their ability to keep up and are treating these medications like performance drugs. The problem is they don't help that much, and they're easy to get dependent on. So there's also a lot of abuse. And with more prescriptions, trips to the emergency room have really gone up as well.
And Adderall, is that a stimulant?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And so you're saying that Adderall or medication should be the last resort, or at least that's what you've discovered in your research.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
I think it can be helpful for some people. So the stigma around it should not prevent people from exploring, experimenting with it, people with a genuine diagnosis, if they actually need it. But there are some other things you can do as well.
You said exercise before the break. What else?
Well, there's exercise. There's for kids, there's behavioral therapy. For adults, there's cognitive therapy. Sitting with a psychiatrist and talking about your childhood is probably not going to be as helpful as sitting for an adult, sitting and talking about the way that you talk to yourself, because about 50% of people with ADHD have like anxiety or depression or some kind of accompanying disorder. So often that is taking most of the toll. So that is often the area where you really have to target your effort, because that can be more debilitating than the ADHD.
Let's take some calls. We have Christine in La Crosse with us. Hi, Christine.
Hi. I just had a question about, because I'm a parent that, especially for children, like your caller said, likes to use medication as a last resort for anything. And I know a lot of children that get diagnosed with ADHD and get prescribed medication, have side effects, get prescribed another medication. I guess I would just like to know what your caller suggests for parents that think that their children might have this issue, to make sure that that's actually the issue and not some underlying thing that they could be fixing otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Catherine?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question, because that, again, goes to the fact that often when you have ADHD, and for children as well, they'll be anxious or depressed, and that might be the thing that needs treatment the most. And the trick really is that you have to find a very good medical provider, and I think that's getting harder and harder. Child psychiatrists are rare. Lots of pediatricians won't treat ADHD, or they'll do it in a very cursory manner with a quick appointment and a prescription. So as a parent, and this is one of the reasons I wrote my book, Buzz, as a parent, it's really a journey, and you have to put in a lot of work. I had been an experienced professional journalist before I started it, so I knew how to ask questions and do research. One reason I wrote that book was because I really wanted to give parents the information that I was so fortunate to be able to find, because most parents were working hard. We were not sure where to start, and it's really a lot of responsibility.
I've also seen the criticism that we are too quick to drug our children. You know, these kids that are maybe a little hyper aren't necessarily suffering from this disorder, and we shouldn't be putting them on drugs. What's your response to that?
I think that both Steve and I would agree that in some cases people are too quick to diagnose and medicate kids, and it's really, really unfortunate. But we both think that an equally serious or worse problem is that there is so much stigma around this disorder that controversy hurts some people who would otherwise get treated when they need it.
Yeah. Christine, anything else?
No, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Christine.
Thank you, Christina.
We have David on Facebook who says, I am a 40-year-old male. I was diagnosed with ADD when I was in grade school. Ritalin worked extremely well for me when I was a kid. Now, as an adult, I have a million and one projects started but not finished. Focus is a very hard thing for me to do at times. Well, this affords us the opportunity to talk about how ADHD changes over time. But first, he said ADD. Is that an outmoded term?
Exactly, yes. ADHD has been called several things over the last few decades. It's been called minimal brain dysfunction, hyperkinetic impulse disorder, attention deficit disorder, which was the name in 1980. And in 1987, people agreed to call it ADHD, which includes the component of hyperactivity. You don't have to be hyperactive to have it, but you can be. I'd be really interested to hear from David if he thought the Ritalin stopped working. Sometimes, often you do need to change treatments or try new strategies as you get older. A lot of people with ADHD are very successful, and you scratch the surface and you find out they have administrative assistants or very, very patient spouses. Often they're getting some kind of support, and it's really the journey of this disorder to find the support that works for you.
Interesting. So do you, Catherine, did you have ADHD or the symptoms of it anyway when you were a child and you just didn't, they just weren't recognized, or is this something that can develop later in life?
Well, Joy, that brings up the question of girls versus boys.
Oh, okay.
Because boys are often much more likely to get diagnosed all through history. Girls are getting diagnosed in higher numbers now, but especially back when I was growing up in the dinosaur age, it was easy to slip under the radar because girls more often have the dreamy kind of the disorder. Boys more often are hyperactive, but girls just might be spacing out and they escape notice. Plus, girls are conditioned much more than boys to try to cooperate and, you know, be good. And that's another reason that often girls don't get treated as kids. That was the case with me. And what Steve Hinshaw has found in some really important research is that girls then suffer the consequences, that girls are much more likely than boys when they have ADHD to grow up with terrible anxiety and depression, suicide attempts, eating disorders. There's a whole list of consequences that make it really important to be aware of the possibility of ADHD in girls.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. And in David's case, diagnosed in grade school and now as an adult, it still suffers of the says he has a million and one projects started. That's a typical
symptom. So common.
Symptom.
I have that problem, too.
Yeah. We don't know if he's continuing to take Ritalin. Is that typical that somebody would be taking it all their lives?
It definitely happens. Mm-hmm. Usually you have to adjust your dose or mm-hmm. there's been new medications, some improved coming on the market. Often adults will end up maybe doing some cognitive therapy, which is really, really helpful when you have problems like this. And there's a lot more therapists for adults who are now have a subspecialty in ADHD. There's also coaches, which I have some questions about. It's an unregulated profession, but again, if you find a good coach that you can work with, it could really help.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Catherine Ellison, who is co-author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. Is there something you would like to know? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Maybe you'd like to share an experience. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Ken in Horicon is with us now. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I'd like to ask the lady about the relationship between, I'm very curious about the relationship between Christianity and ADHD. And I'm curious about how would you describe yourself in terms of how many times a month would you go to church, and if there's been any studies between the relationship of church-going people and the diagnosis of ADHD.
Why would you think there's a connection, Ken?
Because Christ, through our faith, that Christ dispenses peace to people, and it seems that the anxiety is the antithesis of peace.
Well, any response to that, Catherine?
Well, I'm not Christian. I'm Jewish, and I don't actually go to synagogue. But it's interesting because I think for anybody, you know, people often recommend, experts often recommend that if you're depressed, if you're anxious, that you improve your social relationships, right? And that social relationships are really good for the brain. So I think activities like this, like going to church, are good for anybody's brain.
Let's go next to Ron in Park Falls. Hello, Ron.
Hi, good morning. A lot of research has shown that, or some research has shown that some of the ADHD may be caused by sleep disorders. Were you ever tested, or your son? Because a lot of the symptoms are similar.
What kind of disorder?
Sleep disorders.
Oh, sleep disorder. Yes, there's a lot of overlapping there. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing is that ADHD can ruin your sleep, or that if you have bad sleep for other reasons, you might get symptoms that are like ADHD. So a sleep disorder doesn't necessarily cause ADHD. It can cause a lot of distraction, difficulties in focusing. But the ADHD and the anxiety that often comes with it, because you often feel kind of out of control, can make sleeping really hard.
Have you ever been tested, though?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Yes, I have. Yeah, and that's not an issue for me.
Yeah. Thanks, Ron, for the call. So if you get adequate sleep or help in getting adequate sleep, would that diminish the symptoms of ADHD?
Well, again, they are two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that sleep disorder it causes ADHD. ADHD is something that you're born with and that surfaces in youth. But it's a really good point, because if you're the parent of a child, and again, who you think has ADHD, and this just goes back to what a long slog it can be to be in that position, you really need to have your child checked out thoroughly. You should make sure that they're not low on thyroid, that there aren't physical conditions, including sleep disorders, that are causing them to be distracted. So before you put them on medication or before you go down the behavior therapy route, you have to rule out some of these other things.
Yeah.
A kid could be anxious for reasons unrelated to ADHD and not have ADHD, and anxiety could be causing them to be very distracted.
What about diet and Halloween candy?
Well, Halloween candy is a great example, because what researchers have found is that, contrary to popular belief, sugar does not cause ADHD, although so many parents think it does. But there has been some important research about artificial colors and dyes and preservatives. There's been some very good studies on that, and those can worsen the symptoms.
We are talking about ADHD with Catherine Ellison. She is the author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Both Ellison and her son have been diagnosed with ADHD. And our next caller is Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
Hi, so my question is about, I've also been diagnosed with ADHD, and I don't tell anyone because I'm a student, and there's a stigma, and also the drugs are in demand and all that. But I was wondering, I've done research on if you're diagnosed as a child, which I wasn't, and you're given some medication, how it can really help to rewire your brain in addition with, you know, cognitive therapy. But have you found any research on that, if it's caught early, if it can be semi-reversed, because it is a brain issue. It's a cognitive thing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a really good question, because our brains really are plastic. So the experiences that we have shape our brains, and definitely that's a more powerful effect in an early age. So maybe medication, maybe good therapy. It doesn't have to be medication, but yes, I think brains get rewired by experiences, and so if you have a child who has undiagnosed ADHD and is having just negative experiences, which is what I as a parent was really worried about for my son, they start becoming a negative person. They start reacting negatively to the world, and they really can shape their whole future.
Are you still there, Mary?
I am.
Yeah, so when you say that you don't tell anybody because there's a stigma, what is it? What is that stigma? What are you afraid of?
I want to perform the same way that others do, and I don't want to be seen differently. The medications, I don't want people to think that I'm on the medications because I went and got a prescription because I'm a college student and just wanted it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, faking it or thinking that you're faking it even, you know. So a lot of people really do have it, but they feel like frauds. And so I just don't want to deal with any of that.
Oh.
You know, Mary, one of the reasons that Steve and I wrote this book and that I've written other things about ADHD and that I personally, everybody I know knows that I have ADHD, is that we really both very much believe that stigma can be more hurtful than the actual disorder. And it's really just a variability in human temperament. Every person is different, and it's part of what makes you probably wonderful in many ways. A lot of people with ADHD have tremendous energy and creativity. It's just a matter of harnessing it. So I hope that it's not something that makes you ashamed of yourself, because it's just the draw of genes that you got.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I don't want to deal with the other people's thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
I guess that's
part
of it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, not your real name, which I...
Yeah, I wish you good luck.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Michelle in Fall River is with us. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, this is Michelle. I have a daughter who was diagnosed with ADHD and ODD back when she was 6. Her dad died when she was 2, and I was pregnant with my son at the time. And I had gotten some social work, well, a child advocate that had come into the home and tried to help me figure out why we were having all these problems with my daughter. And at that time, I think I was also trying to go through my grieving process, and then at that time to take care of a infant.
That's so tough.
Yeah.
I just want to say, when you say ODD, you mean oppositional defiant disorder, which is present in about half the kids who have ADHD. It's a rebelliousness. It makes kids really, really hard to parent.
Correct.
But go on.
And we had put her in Rogers for a day clinic for about 3 months. She, at that time, was taking pills for it. And then it seemed to help us and everything. It also broke up my husband's family and I, because they blamed it on me. And they also did a lot of other nasty things as far as trying to take over my life. I basically had to go to court to have them kind of stay away.
Oh, my goodness, Michelle. I'm so sorry for all of your stress and all of your sadness. And this is there a question that...
My problem is now has progressed because she's 13. I have a social worker involved. They're actually thinking of taking her out of the home, like, this weekend, because she's constantly arguing with me. I cannot physically take her anywhere. I have cerebral palsy in my heel cords, and my hip is going bad. So I don't know with ODD and ADHD children if they have more strength. But I can't physically go to get her help. She refuses. She shuts everybody off and gets pretty nasty and is kind of tried to isolate herself with her brother and trying to keep him separate.
Michelle, I am so sorry. Catherine, this affects a lot of people when it's this severe, huh?
It does. And again, parents are really on their own, I think, way too much in our society, because again, if you have a child with ADHD and ODD who is very oppositional, you have to cope with the stigma. You have to cope with other people's judgment of you. Often it's really not your parenting, as many people will tell you. Your parenting is to blame. But you just have a really, really difficult situation, and you have to get outside help. And good outside help is very hard to find. A lot of people end up sending their kids to wilderness camps or, you know, therapeutic treatment programs. People spend their life savings on things like that.
Good luck to you, Michelle.
Wish you well.
Yeah, thank you for calling. We will take more of your phone calls with questions and experiences for our guest, Catherine Ellison, who is the co-author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Catherine Ellison, co-author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question or a story to share. Christina in Eau Claire is with us. Hi, Christina.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have many passionate thoughts on this topic, but the
most passion I have about this is the dietary and nutrition correlation to ADHD. I was diagnosed as an adult, and I actually went in for diagnosis based on my son's aggressive and impulsive behavior. So we got him seen. He doesn't have the official diagnosis as of yet, but all signs point to that, especially with my diagnosis. So the very first thing that I started researching was removing potential allergens and possibly even being malnourished. And the reason I say malnourished is because of our societal trend to process foods, less fruits and vegetables, and just really not focusing on healthy, clean eating. So I actually did a trial with him, and I participated with him in a gluten and dairy elimination, as well as food dyes, MSG, preservatives. I mean, we're talking very strict, clean eating. And his daycare, within a week, asked me if I had put him on a stimulant because his behavior changes were so significant.
Yeah. That's great. You know, a lot of parents do have faith in dietary changes. And again, there's strong evidence about the preservatives and the dyes that might be aggravating the symptoms. So it's wonderful that you got help there. On elimination diets and on gluten, there isn't solid evidence, but you know what's really interesting is there's quite an impact if a parent starts really paying attention to the child, and that could be just in the way of managing a diet. That can be helpful for the child because the child wants to feel protected and safe and related to.
Yeah, you have spent a lot of time researching both conventional and alternative treatments. What treatments have you found to be the most effective?
Well, I'm going to go back to exercise. I had discovered this long before I knew I had ADHD. I was an exercise junkie. I just knew somehow that I had to get some kind of aerobic exercise every day or I wouldn't be able to focus well. So that's what kept me going long before I knew I had ADHD. And there's lots of good research, whereas on diet, the research is not quite as solid. On exercise, there's solid research that it helps. So the first thing I would do as a parent or as a person who's finding a lot of trouble with distraction is get into a good exercise program. Another thing is behavioral therapy for children, clear rewards and clear limits. Medication, I would not rule out, but again, use it as a last resort. But sometimes, if a child is really in crisis, the medication can help just stabilize things while the parent is trying to get his or her bearings. You know, I want to make the point that neither Steve nor I has any links to the pharmaceutical industry, as do a lot of people who write about ADHD. So we really felt that was important to give people a non-biased information, because this is such a controversial issue. Everything that you do about ADHD is the subject of endless judgment by other people.
Marcus on Facebook asks, if treated correctly, can ADHD become an advantage in life?
Well, again, there's a lot of famous people who are now talking about their ADHD. Richard Branson, who the founder of Virgin Airlines, people like that. There's lots of evidence that ADHD has no correlation with intelligence. Like, you will get very bright people and not so bright people who have it. But for people who are intelligent, it can add that extra energy and creativity. Or, you know, you can, it can be a source of creativity just because you're not, your brakes aren't working as well as other people. So you might not discard an idea that could turn out to be a good one. I think that's basically how it works.
Denise in Dodgeville is with us now. Hi, Denise.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm 68, and I was diagnosed back in the late 80s. And boy, I could tell you stories about what that was all like. I won't go there. For many, many years, my doctor and I tried all kinds of different medications. And so we went through all of that
the Adderall didn't work for me. Well, it did in the beginning and didn't take very long till it didn't work. Effexor. Ritalin was probably the best for me, but even that seems to, it's like your brain figures out, oh, you're taking this drug. Well, then we're just going to go around it. And mm-hmm. I would end up still feeling like I couldn't get anything done. And so that was back in Pennsylvania, family doctor. I moved out this year here to Wisconsin. And I went to the university to get set up with a doctor and just for all my physical stuff. And then I mentioned that I had been diagnosed with, it was actually ADD at the time. And they wanted me to start at square one. And this young doctor suggested I try meditation. Well, I've done meditation and yoga for 60 years, run 60 years, 20 years, ran cross country. So I know, read everything I could read. I know all of this. And the idea of having to start at square one again almost makes me burst into tears. How can I find a doctor or a therapist, a psychiatrist, someone who's up to date on what's going on with this disease?
Boy, it's so tough, and I'm just listening to you and thinking that there is such a paradox, because people with ADHD, as a rule, are impulsive and impatient, and yet it takes so much patience to find trial and error your way through all these different competing possible therapies or disciplines in your life, and you just have to keep going. To find a therapist, that's really hard. That's one reason that Steve and I wrote this book, because we tried to answer people's any question that we could imagine that people might ask as a starting point. But what you should do, or what I would do in your place, is if you have any doctor that you trust, really lean on that doctor to find you a therapist. And again, you might have to go to one and then go to another. I wish it were easier. It's not. With all that we've learned about ADHD and how far we've come, there's still a lot of people who don't know how to treat it, unfortunately.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Denise. And I'm absolutely not hinting that this is what's happening in Denise's case. But is there a doctor shopping going on, or some sort of belief in the medical community that you know, that people are trying to get Adderall or Ritalin without?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's a lot of abuse. That's really, really a problem. And again, it gets back to that question of adults and kids these days are under more pressure, I think, than we've ever been in our evolutionary history, in terms of the cognitive demands, in terms of how much information we're all expected to process, and everybody wants to keep up. So that's driving it. The ADHD stimulants don't give you a high. It's not that people are out seeking, you know, pleasure seeking. I think most of the abuse of the medications is driven by this anxiety about performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's got to be frustrating. Does meditation and yoga help?
You know, I actually just wrote an article about that for Mindful Magazine, and I interviewed a woman who's done some great studies on this. The evidence is increasing that meditation can help. It's, again, the problem is that people with ADHD have a really hard time meditating. For myself, I've had some success for the first time in my life recently by using an app, and I'll say what it is. It's Headspace, which has become very, very popular for good reason.
What does it do?
You sit and listen to it for 20 minutes, and they guide you through meditation with less and less talking, so you get into the practice. But for me, just to have it on my phone, and to, I've developed the habit of first thing in the morning, 20 minutes, and I start out my day with a much clearer head. And I'm really grateful for it, because on my own, it's really impossible to be that disciplined.
Let's go back to the phones, and Sandy in Walworth is with us. Hello, Sandy.
Hello. My question is regarding having ADHD along with other things, such as something on the autism spectrum like Asperger's. Is this something that happens? Is it possible? Or
are they connected sometimes?
Sometimes there are. Sometimes people have both of the disorders, yes. Mm-hmm. Right. You can have ADHD with a lot of other things.
Okay.
And you know what, I just want to add something to the last thought. I was mentioning Headspace, the meditation app.
Yes.
another computer program that I think is really important for me to tout here is called Freedom. And what it does is it shuts off your internet and your email for a certain period of time. And if you want to turn them back, you have to restart your computer, which for many people is, you know, they'd rather delay that. So most of us, I think, with or without ADHD, are having trouble with the demands, the cognitive demands that come with our information economy, and we have to figure out strategies to manage it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you think that ADHD is worse because of all of our technology?
No, I don't think that the technology is causing ADHD. Well, maybe it does exacerbate the symptoms in people who already have it, but it's definitely putting demands like we've never seen on our brains. I'm a digital immigrant. The internet wasn't around when I was growing up, so I'm in the generations that are really feeling the impact of it, but a lot of kids are growing up inside it and don't even realize just how much time they're spending multitasking or on their devices, and it's something that I think everybody should be aware of and trying to manage consciously.
Luke in Eau Claire is with us. Hello, Luke.
Hi there. I just had a couple questions, actually. So the first one is, you were talking about different variations of ADHD before. One was, but the thing that I don't feel like I can relate to is the hyperactivity side. My main struggle is just paying attention, and I'm very spacey. So I think you were talking about how girls typically tend to be more on the spacey side, whereas males tend to be
There's definitely males who have the inattentive version of the disorder.
Sure, okay.
It's not just a girl thing.
Okay, so I was just wondering, this is the spectrum of ADHD as a whole, like what, like how many different variations they were, I guess. I don't know if you can elaborate more on that.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Luke.
Sorry, yeah, and then one more thing was, I'm seeing a therapist right now. We just had our first meeting, and he referred a book to me called Spark. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
That's the book that has all the research about the exercise.
Yeah, so, well, what about, is there, are there different, I don't know, spectrums for ADHD?
Well, first of all of us are on a kind of a bell curve of our ability to pay attention and control our impulses. But what you can do, if you're really interested, is Google the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual definition for ADHD, and you will find that it describes three versions. One is the inattentive, one is the hyperactive, and one is the combined type. And it will list all the questions that you can answer. So you can pretty much diagnose yourself over the internet as a first step before looking for a therapist. I also want to just say something really quickly about what Steve and I call the ADHD industrial complex.
Yes.
People with ADHD get marketed all sorts of crazy supplements, exercise routines, certain sorts of coaches and therapists and occupational therapists, and you really have to be a smart consumer because you can waste a lot of money. So stick with the basics. Find a good therapist. Proceed carefully.
I'm glad we got that in before we ended the hour. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Catherine Ellison is the co-author of ADHD, What Everyone Needs to Know. Thanks to Marika Suval and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, we're going to talk about Midwest nights with a guest who says it's really not all that nice. More on that tomorrow. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.